In our new series, World War II's Greatest Battles, we chart five pivotal moments that shaped the course of the conflict with military historian James Holland. New episodes drop every Thursday on the History Extra podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today Healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Ellie Cawthorne. In today's podcast, we're speaking to BBC Radio Documentaries producer Lawrence Grissell about his recent BBC Radio 4 series, The Californian Century, which explores how the American state shaped the world throughout the 20th century. Our World Histories editor, Matt Elton, caught up with Lawrence to find out more.
What inspired this series on the history of California?
Well, I went to an exhibition at the Design Museum in Helsinki, and I think it was a touring exhibition, and it was looking at the connection between the counterculture in California and Silicon Valley. And I thought this was really interesting to, A, make that link between the counterculture and the kind of development of Silicon Valley. But I thought, actually, maybe there's a bigger story here which connects more of the dots through kind of 20th century California. And then I sort of started thinking about the kind of, the fact that the state had given birth to both Hollywood and to Silicon Valley. And I was interested, I suppose, at looking at what the kind of deep forces, the deep dynamics were that gave rise to these two industries that have just completely transformed the world. So in a sense, it was out of that kind of exhibition that this interest grew in looking at, you know, how California came to be this unique place.
And in what sort of period can we trace the roots of the origins of these two industries?
Well, I mean, in a way, our brief within the series is to look at the last century. But actually, you can't ignore the gold rush from the mid-19th century, because in a sense, that's where it all starts, because that, in a sense, creates so much of the wealth that makes so much else possible later on. And I suppose, in a sense, that's an interesting way of looking at California, is a sort of accumulation of capital that takes place through the last 100, 150 years. So it starts with the gold rush. Then we get the advent of Hollywood. At around the same time, we get the oil boom. So again, this accumulation of wealth continues. Then we go into the Second World War, a further accumulation of wealth, because of course, California produces so many of the aircraft, so many of the ships, so many of the armaments that are used to fight the Second World War. 10% of the whole US war budget is spent in California. So again, the Second World War, a further accumulation of wealth. And then coming, you know, right up to the present day, through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, the development of Silicon Valley. So in a sense, you can sort of see it as these kind of, you know, sedimentary layers of wealth, which I think, you know, notwithstanding obviously all the creativity and the ingenuity, but I think that, you know, it's this accumulation of wealth that makes so much possible in the state.
Mm. And as the state grew wealthier, so it attracted more and more people who wanted to become wealthy. Something the first episode of the series does really nicely is kind of sketch out how people were drawn to this kind of almost frontier territory to start new lives or escape their old ones, I suppose.
Yes, I think there's a sense of the, you know, the blank slate of starting, you know, starting afresh. And as, you know, Jerry Brown, the longest serving governor of California, who I was lucky enough to interview, you know, says, I suppose, you know, we do have to remember that these people were arriving in the US, on the West Coast, really having no idea what awaited them. And I think, you know, we have to remind ourselves today that they just didn't have a clue, that it was the great unknown. So what they came to was a blank slate. And, you know, as contributors say, you know, the landscape was, you know, exploited, shaped, refashioned, you know, and sort of turned into gold, you know, sometimes in a kind of, you know, literal way, others, you know, other times in a sort of metaphorical way. And what goes hand in hand with that is of course, I suppose an open-mindedness and an openness anyway to, you know, different ways of, you know, of living, a kind of, and certainly if one's looking in terms of religious freedom, for those who were, you know, migrating from other parts of the United States later on in the period, there's, you know, there's an openness there to, you know, different ways of different forms of religion. And as we explore in a number of episodes, you know, that also is mirrored in, particularly in San Francisco, that, you know, that there is an openness to different ways of living, which perhaps doesn't, which isn't manifest in on the East Coast of the United States, or indeed in the old world.
There was, of course, a slightly darker side to this sort of openness, this liberty. To what extent were you keen in the series to explore some of the more negative side in terms of the experiences of Indigenous people or in terms of other groups of people?
In the series, we have been keen to explore the widespread racism that you can see through much of the, you know, the history of California. Of course, that racism is in no way unique to California. It's not unique to the United States. But I felt you couldn't tell this story without looking at that in some detail. And so we do spend a lot of time in the program talking about African Americans, talking about Mexican Americans, and trying to kind of represent their experience. Because I think the temptation when one looks at California is to emphasize the big success story. And obviously there is a big success story to tell. But I think, you know, this is a state which is very well practiced at mythologizing itself. And I suppose what I wanted to try to do in the series was to counter some of that, to balance that with, you know, the fact that many of those people who were building the state, quite literally laying the railroads, building the roads, you know, farming the fields, were treated very badly. From the early beginnings of filmmaking in Hollywood, I mean, that in a sense was a kind of a way of transmitting to the rest of the United States what California represented. And so, because, you know, so many films were shot there, it was great advertising for the state. And so I think the idea of image and portraying an image of California as this place of opportunity really is there from, you know, the very beginning.
Something else that interests me is the idea that people moved to California and experienced racism, they experienced prejudice and inequality, but it was still better than what they'd experienced before they moved.
Well, certainly that was what one of my interviewees said, was, you know, particularly for those people who were coming from the South. Then, you know, even though California was deeply segregated, and even though African Americans and Mexican Americans were treated extremely badly, there were opportunities there that were not present, say, for instance, in the southern part of the United States. And that was certainly what one of our African-American contributors said to us.
What other people did you speak to in the course of making this series, and did any of those stand out particularly?
Well, I mean, I suppose the most, one of the interesting conversations for me was my interview with Jerry Brown, who was the longest serving governor of California, who served both in the 1970s and then again in the 2010s. He took over from Ronald Reagan in the mid-70s, and then he took over from Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor in the 2010s. And what I found most interesting about that interview was that, you know, Jerry Brown is not afraid to question the kind of orthodoxies. And in a sense, you know, California is built on this sort of assumption, like much of the kind of capitalist world, on the assumption of continual economic growth. What Jerry Brown was saying was that going forward and looking into the next century, he was asking, is it actually possible that we can continue to grow as we have done? That's both in terms of population growth, but in terms of economic growth. And he was saying that the next 100 years would be one of limits. And in a sense, I suppose the last 100 years of Californian history has been about, you know, unlimited growth, unfettered growth. And he's saying we can't keep on growing forever. We have to accept that there are limits, you know, and particularly in the environmental context, that the environment, you know, particularly in the environmental context, if you think about the mid-19th century, then California was all about exploiting its environment, and it's created vast wealth from doing so, you know, throwing cyanide into the water to yield up the gold, as one of our contributors put it, and you know, his view, Jerry Brown's view, is that, you know, times have changed, and the next 100 years cannot be about that kind of exploitation, and that California has to limit its growth.
I mean, I had no idea, for instance, the extent to which figures such as William Mulholland reshaped the entire landscape of the area to make this kind of wealth possible. How does the series explore his story?
Yeah, well, Mulholland's an interesting one who I'd never heard of. And I should give all credit to Dr. Ian Scott of Manchester University, who was my trusted academic consultant for this series. And it was Ian's idea to use to tell the story of William Mulholland. Of course, I knew the name from, you know, Mulholland Drive, as everyone does, but I didn't really know who he was. And so, you know, I mean, the interesting thing about Mulholland is that, you know, without him, there would be no Los Angeles, because Los Angeles could only grow if it had more water. I mean, it was basically a desert. And the only way that it was going to be able to grow was, you know, if it got some water from somewhere. And the answer to that was in the Owens Valley, which was, you know, which had a river which was fed by the mountains of the Sierra Nevada. And the plan was basically to divert that river and build an aqueduct for 200 miles, which would take the water down to Los Angeles. And so they embarked on what I believe was the biggest, the longest aqueduct that had been built up to that point, and diverted, you know, that water down to Los Angeles, which enabled Los Angeles to grow. Of course, there were casualties in that, and the casualties were the farmers of the Owens Valley, who had essentially been conned out of selling their land. And of course, their land, once the water was diverted, turned to dust. It was Mulholland who did the engineering on all of that, and really made all of that possible. You know, an ingenious, you know, figure, and one who ultimately you know, a man whose reputation would suffer when the St. Francis Dam, which he'd also built, collapsed, which had catastrophic consequences, as you can imagine. Mulholland's reputation was really destroyed, you know, by that, having had this kind of glittering career.
The story of that dam breaking is told really dramatically in the series. At what point did you decide the approach you were going to take in the series, and how did you get Stanley Tucci involved?
Well, from the start, I wanted to... I thought a good way to tell this story would be through film scripts, because California, Hollywood is, you know, synonymous, obviously, with, you know, telling stories. And most of us, frankly, are familiar with California through movies. And so it seemed like a kind of neat way of bringing this story to life. When I pitched it, this was my idea, that we try and tell it through film scripts. And I wasn't quite sure how I was going to achieve that. So over the summer, I sort of, you know, sat down with my laptop and I suppose tried to find a voice for the program. And I mean, hopefully I found it. That's for listeners to decide. You know, if you listen to it, you'll hear that each program is framed in terms of an individual character, and kind of key moments in that character's story are evoked through these kind of imagined film scripts, some of which are kind of loosely based on sort of movies like Sunset Boulevard, Chinatown, you know, the sorts of stories which, you know, through which we sort of know California.
And how about Stanley's involvement?
Well, I was obviously looking for somebody who will, because the scripts are written, loosely speaking, in a kind of film noir style, I really wanted somebody who I felt could carry that. And Stanley seemed like the perfect choice. And I wasn't, sure if he would say yes. I mean, as far as I know, he's never done any Radio 4 before. Whether he's done any other radio, I don't know. Certainly not that I know of. And I suppose I also wanted somebody who had, who was sort of associated with Hollywood, which obviously Stanley is, having appeared in so many, fantastic movies. So I sent some of the scripts, some of the drafts through to him, and he had a look and he liked what he saw and he said yes, which I was absolutely thrilled about. And, I have to say that the process of recording with him was fantastic, because he absolutely got what I was trying to do. I mean, this was my worry, that I'd written these scripts and I was thinking, well, does it work? Stanley really just got it. From the moment he started, he got exactly what I was trying to do. This sense of the kind of hard-boiled, seen it all, metamorph type screenwriter. The kind of classic screenwriter figure, if one thinks of film noir. And he got it. So I was I was absolutely thrilled with that.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
One of the things that California has been built on is migration from elsewhere in the United States, but also migration from elsewhere in the world. And the fact is, now more people are leaving California than are settling there.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Another figure, and I guess theme that emerges through the series, is of strong women. How did you choose which female characters to include, and what do you think their inclusion says about this kind of area more generally?
I suppose one of the more unexpected characters in the series is Dianne Feinstein, now Senator Dianne Feinstein, who took over from Mayor George Moscone in San Francisco when Moscone and Harvey Milk, the first gay councillor or city supervisor, as they call their councillors in San Francisco. The thing is about that story, I thought, well, everybody or a lot of people know the Harvey Milk story, because there was that great movie a few years back in which he was played by Sean Penn. So I thought that story had been told, but I thought the story that hadn't been told was the story of the woman who took over from Mayor George Moscone, who was brutally murdered on the same day as Harvey Milk. And so I thought that was a good and sort of unexpected story that people wouldn't know, you know, that in a sense, Dianne Feinstein had, you know, very abruptly been sort of forced to step up as mayor of San Francisco after these two, you know, brutal killings, which of course had occurred just after the Jonestown massacre, which took place in you know, Guyana, and 1,000 people died in that, and of course many of those people were from the Bay Area. And so I thought, you know, that was a tough job taking over at that time. And so I thought that, you know, that was a really worthwhile story to tell. And also, Dianne Feinstein is a centrist. And it's interesting, I think you don't often hear stories about centrist politicians. You know, often the stories we tell about the politicians are the kind of divisive figures from the right or the left. The people who divide people rather than the people who bring people together. And in a sense, that was Dianne Feinstein's role in this very, very difficult period in the history of San Francisco.
Mm. Do you think that studying this history of California can help us make sense of America today?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, in a way, California sort of stands apart from the rest of the United States in many ways, which is it's much more liberal in terms of its politics than most of the United States. But I think what it sort of can help us understand is, given the influence of Silicon Valley now, and that influence, which is in a sense a global influence, I think it can help us understand what has driven that, what has made that possible. And, you know, in a sense, our modern world has been shaped by Silicon Valley. And, you know, the kind of dynamics that are at work in California over the past 100 years have given rise to Silicon Valley, have made Silicon Valley what it is. In a sense, you know, much of the world that we live in today is, in a sense, the product of California.
Are there any other key characters or themes that you'd like to draw out that you think the series focuses on?
Ice-T is an interesting one. Ice-T, the gangster rapper, in a sense, the original gangster rapper. And I don't think you need to know anything about gangster rap in order to get something out of that episode. Because I suppose what Ice-T represents, in a sense, is the paradox of California. You know, which is that, you know, here's a guy who made a record called Cop Killer, which came out around the same time as the horrific beating of Rodney King by the LAPD.
And, which was in 1992, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, 1992. And of course, the LA riots, or the LA rebellion, as some people call it, which followed on from that. So Ice T made this record, Cop Killer, which was hugely controversial, one of the most controversial records of all time. But then, of course, what Ice-T goes on to do is to play a cop in a TV series, called Law and Order. And in a sense, that for me represents the paradox of California, you know, which is that you can bring out a record, you know, called Cop Killer, which, you know, depending on your point of view, you can interpret, you know, the meaning of that record in multiple ways. So I think it's really interesting, this kind of paradox, that you can bring out a record called Cop Killer, and then you can, you know, go on TV, play a cop in a TV series called Law and Order. And that, in a sense, represents many of the kind of paradoxes and contradictions of this place called California.
Mm. And finally, that leads into my last question, which is, are there any other ways that you'd like this series to change how people view California and its importance to the modern world?
I don't think I want to change anybody's view about California, but I suppose what I'd like them what I hope the series will do is to make them think about the forces that are at work in the last 100 years of kind of Californian history. The forces that have, you know, in a sense, conspired to create Hollywood, which in a way is, you know, is one of the ways in which we sort of see the world, in a way. And also, which of course those forces have also given rise to Silicon Valley, which is, I'm sure it's fair to say, more influential than Hollywood in shaping our modern world, and will continue to, you know, shape our modern world. So I hope it will just make people think about the dynamics that are at work.
What do you think the future holds for California?
Well, that is interesting, I think. And from having, you know, conducted many interviews with people in California and speaking to Governor Jerry Brown, the longest serving governor of California, many people's view was that the next 100 years are not going to be anywhere near as easy as the last 100 years, because it's California cannot continue exploiting its landscape in the same way that it has over the last 100 years, in the view of, you know, many of the people that I spoke to. One of the things that California has been built on is migration. Migration from elsewhere in the United States, but also migration from elsewhere in the world. And the fact is, now more people are leaving California than are settling there. And so for a state that is built on migration, I think that poses an existential question.
That was Lawrence Grissel. His series, The Californian Century, is available now on BBC Sounds. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Ben Hewitt and Jack Bateman. Join us next on Wednesday when David Abulafia will be discussing his award-winning book, The Boundless Sea.